Hey guys, I'm Valerie.
And I'm Jasmine, and this is Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
And we are bringing you today another case that's gonna piss you off. Are you ready?
I wish everybody could see your face. Just like, get this really big sarcastic smile on your face.
Yeah, it's just my general state of, you know, it's just what I look like, unfortunately. Today, we are going to be talking about Amanda Wienkowski. The sources for this are Niagara Falls Reporter, Niagara Gazette, ArtVoice.net, WBFO, WIBV4 News, WGRZ News, TreatedLikeTrash.com. There was a YouTube video of Solve Crimes TV that has an episode called Treated Like Trash, where they actually analyze an interview of Antoine Garner, who will make sense to you in a minute. And Erie.gov. Triggers for this episode, we are going to be talking about drug use, sex work, sexual abuse, and talk of suicide. So please be cautious of all of those things coming into this episode. Amanda Wienkowski was 20 years old at the time of our story in 2008. She graduated from Niagara Wheatfield High School in 2006 and had just enrolled Niagara County Community College to begin attending in spring of 2009 and study criminal justice. She wanted to be a police officer. One of Amanda's sisters was moving back to the area, and her, another sister of theirs, and Amanda were all planning on moving in together. Unfortunately, Amanda had a bad heroin habit. She worked at a bar during the day, but had also gotten involved in sex work to support her heroin habit. Her friend and roommate, a customer in his 40s, Adam Patterson, essentially became her pimp. He was also involved in drug trade. They lived in the Tuscarora Reservation in New York. On December 5th, 2008, Amanda was working at the bar when she got a call from Patterson. She asked a coworker to cover for her so that she could leave, and Patterson came and picked her up. Amanda was going to be exchanging sex for drugs with a man named Antoine Garner. According to Garner, they met at a bar in October of that year. Patterson dropped Amanda off at 6 p.m. Garner was a bulky man, about 300 pounds, which is very large compared to Amanda, who probably weighed about 100 pounds. Now, we, of course, have two different versions of events. According to Patterson, Amanda called him to say it was taking longer than normal, so he left and went back to their apartment. According to Garner, Amanda, whom he knew as Summer, not Manda, only stayed a few minutes before leaving. She wanted Oxycontin. Though they had had sex before, they did not have sex that day, even though Patterson says that they were there for her to exchange sex for drugs. He says that Amanda texted her that evening, and then he didn't hear from her. According to her phone records, she didn't actually send any text messages to him that evening. Something important to note is that Amanda did not like going to this part of town, which is East Buffalo, because it's incredibly dangerous. Her sister said that she only did pills if she couldn't get heroin. So, it is possible, but please keep this in mind also as we move forward. At 6:46 p.m., a phone call was made on Amanda's phone to a number to get weather information. Now, this is pre-smartphone, so you just have to dial a 7-digit number to be able to get the weather. I don't know if anybody else is as old as, as I am, but I feel like I talk about this.
I did not know that you would do that.
Okay, well, that was a thing. I'm sure other people do remember. You used to have to dial a number and they would give you the current weather, whatever. So Amanda never did this. Garner had frequently called this before, though, on his own phone. So it was dialed on Amanda's phone that evening, but that's just an observation, you know, just a speculation that maybe that wasn't her. Ultimately, Amanda didn't make it back to the apartment. After 2 days, on December 7th, Patterson grew concerned because he hadn't heard from Amanda. Now, I think this is kind of a long time because this exchange was for drugs. So, like, did he not need these drugs? Because keep in mind that he's the one who drops her off. So, like, in my mind, this exchange included a benefit for him. I guess not necessarily. But she also lives with him. So, like, where do you think she went? But I don't know what their common situation was, so we're just going to leave that as is for now. So on December 7th, Patterson went to Amanda's family. Her mother, Leslie Brill Messerle, hadn't heard from her since 5:30 on December the 5th, so she reported her missing. The police actually took the case seriously and began looking for Amanda, and the family posted flyers and the like. Patterson also gave Leslie Amanda's purse, which she didn't bring into clients' homes. Now, this makes sense to me, but that Patterson thought that she was doing whatever she needed to do without her purse for 2 days is a different complete mystery to me. Inside of Amanda's purse were needles and heroin, and this actually surprised Leslie because she knew that Amanda was trying to stop her heroin use. Now, I know I mentioned in the beginning that Amanda wanted to be a police officer. That's actually because she had recently become a police informant. She wanted to get clean and work for the police because she got paid well and she really enjoyed the work. Police Officer Ryan Warm was a regular at the bar where Amanda worked, and he frequently worked narcotics cases. This same month of December, he was actually charged with several offenses, which included using his police firearm to commit felonies and drug dealing. He got a plea deal for 13 years, which dismissed several other charges, which includes, want to give you a quick trigger warning here, the rape of two women, forced oral sex while working, and threatening a woman he sexually assaulted to shoot her at the Tuscarora Reservation, which just so happens to be the same place that Amanda lives. I want to know how the fuck there is a plea deal that exists for a police officer that dismisses all of your attacks on women. At the time he was arrested, Warm was also charged with giving details of undercover police activity to drug dealers. So it was a full month without any information leading to where Amanda was. It wasn't until an anonymous tip came in on January 9th, 2009, 5 weeks after her disappearance, that Amanda was found. According to the pastor of New Covenant United Church of Christ, who was not the informant but was later questioned, a garbage tote had been placed in the alcove alongside the church during the night. This same garbage tote was reported stolen in the beginning of January by Antoine Garner's neighbor, because this church was across the street from his house. Inside of the garbage tote was Amanda's body. She was frozen, naked, folded in half, and stuffed in the tote with her bottom up and her head, hands, and feet all down. She had numerous bruises, her hair had been cut, and her tongue was bitten in half. There were finger marks on her throat. Her body was set to be thawed so an autopsy could be performed. Both Garner and Patterson were placed under surveillance and were questioned. Police were ready to tackle this homicide investigation. Leslie's son was the person to identify Amanda's body, and he said of it, quote, "I've never seen so much blood, and she was scared to death. You could see it in her eyes. She wasn't just beaten. There were marks everywhere, to her head, her throat, her face." So you can imagine their shock, and Amanda's family's shock, when the medical examiner determined that Amanda had died of an accidental heroin overdose. Not only that, but 4 medical examiners signed the report. Now, this is completely unheard of. Every once in a while, there may be a report with 2 signatures on it. Never 4. In fact, 4 medical examiners don't even work at the same time. So people who signed the report were not even physically there when the autopsy was performed. Police actually argued with the medical examiners because to them, this was an obvious homicide. Forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Sikirica and Dr. Lawrence Kablinski were given the autopsy and toxicology reports, and they both concluded that there was not enough heroin in her system to have caused her death. There was also no mention of Amanda's bruises and abrasions on the autopsy report. Sikrika stated that Amanda died from strangulation, and Kablinski noted that there was a lot of GHB, which is essentially the date rape drug, in her system, and they both agreed that this was an obvious violent crime. GHB, however, did not appear anywhere on the autopsy report. So, the Erie County Medical Examiner's Office had to amend the report to include GHB. And this time, they said, okay, you're right, it wasn't heroin. GHB was the cause of death. And GHB caused her to asphyxiate. So her death was labeled accidental. I also want to point out that OxyContin, which Garner says is what he gave to Amanda that day, was not in her system. Additionally, they stated that the funeral director is who removed some of Amanda's hair due to the garbage stuck to it. But the funeral director said, on the contrary, her hair was already like that when it arrived to them. An anonymous person involved in the investigation told Leslie that, because this was labeled accidental, they were not given the resources to investigate this case as a homicide. They encouraged Leslie to keep asking questions, to keep calling, and to ask for an independent autopsy. That's how strongly this police force believed that this was a homicide. So Leslie did. Amanda's body was exhumed and an independent autopsy was performed by Dr. Sylvia Comparini, a forensic expert who frequently provides expert testimony for homicides. When the casket was opened for Comparini, she was shocked by the amount of bruising, particularly around the neck, that was not reported in the original autopsy. Inexplicably, the Erie County Medical Examiner's Office kept Amanda's organs, including her tongue, her hyoid bone, her trachea, her liver, her heart, and her brain. And nobody could provide an explanation for this. Without these organs, though, Comparini can't perform a full autopsy. So the family's lawyer, Stephen Cohen, sued for the access to these organs and all information from the original autopsy, something that, quite frankly, shouldn't be necessary. When they finally got it all, they got another shock. There was DNA taken from Amanda's body with results that hadn't been shared with the family, with Cohen, or Comparini. The DNA was from Patterson, Garner, two unidentified men, and two unidentified women. The DNA from Patterson was semen in her mouth that had not fully been digested, which means that it had to have been from a period shortly before her death. And from Garner was hair.
What the fuck? Okay, my mouth is still, like, wide open, but I'm gonna let you finish. This is fucking insane.
Insane. Comparini agreed that Amanda met a violent end, and she actually made a really great point when considering who could have been involved. And she asked Cohen, quote, if you were to dump a body into a garbage tote, how would you do it? So I want to ask you that same question.
If I was to dump a body into a garbage tote, how would I do it?
Correct.
I wouldn't, first of all.
Not an option. It's not helpful.
Oh, this is gonna show how sick I am in real life. Fuck. I would put them in a garbage bag and then put them in there. Like, oh, fuck. Why are you putting me on the spot? I don't like this. I would cut them up and put them in a bag and then put them in the garbage can. That's it. Okay,
I'm done. Oh, my God. You would dismember them?
Yes.
What the fuck, man?
And then just put them in acid, and then that's it, and then be done with it.
What?
That's what I'm saying. Why'd you put me on the spot? That's where my brain went.
Oh my God, how much of this do I not need to tell people? Okay.
Tell them the whole thing. I don't care.
Well, Cohen said that, you know, if you were one person trying to just throw a body into a garbage tote, that you would probably fling them over your shoulder and drop them into the trash.
Oh, so not my answers at all.
Not your answers. Not even a little bit your answers. Now, I really thought that you were going to be a little bit more helpful on that. So I'm a little bit at a standstill because maybe that's not a logical answer then. I would think that somebody who was listening to this probably thought, well, you'd have to fling them in there because, like, it's not easy to throw a person into a garbage truck that's your height. But there are other options, as Jasmine pointed out. So Camperini said, quote, right, and she'd go in butt first, or maybe head first, or maybe feet first. But in this case, Amanda was in there with her head and her feet both facing down. No matter how you figure this, one person's not going to put her in that configuration. Now picture if you have two people. One would take the hands, one would take the feet, and you'd put her in, and she would also probably go butt first. But this was someone who was put in a different location first, and then, when she was frozen solid, was carried out. Which is a very interesting perspective.
So she was folded. He said her head and her feet were face down, or were down?
Correct, and her hands.
Oh my god, okay.
So her butt's up, but the rest of her body is down, which is not a natural position. It'd be very difficult to put somebody into a trash can that way.
Okay, I'm devastated right now.
Garner was initially named a person of interest in this case, but as the accidental ruling stood, no charges were ever made. Erie County District Attorney Frank Sedita said that the DNA evidence was inconclusive and did not see a reason to prosecute. An anonymous person close to the investigation said, quote, when someone in government doesn't want to release information, there is always a reason. It could be a cover-up for an embarrassing mistake, or it could be something darker. And until you find out, you just can't know. So, in the interview I watched, Garner is asked if he wants to know what happened to Amanda. And he says yes, because he is tired of his name being associated with it. And he goes on to talk about how he hates being called a monster. And I'm like, yeah, that's right, because this is completely about you and not about the poor girl who was murdered. But okay. And he also calls it a homicide, even though it was never at this point labeled as a homicide. But at the same time, he would be an easy person to frame by putting her body in a trash can across the street from his house. And he even brings up himself that the person probably thought that his neighbor's trash bin was his because the houses are so close together and nobody would be stupid enough to put a body that they had killed in their own trash can across the street from their house. But I also want to point out that there were cameras on the street that you could see the church from. You can't see the front of Garner's house, though. Well, Leslie had a picture of the camera from January 8th. On January 9th, when Amanda's body was found, the camera was gone. Garner says in his interview that he thought that there was a camera there. Now, anyone can take down a camera, but the guys from the Solve Crimes TV make a really good point about this. Data isn't stored locally, so how come this couldn't be recovered? So, it kind of makes it sound like a cover-up. So, on the second anniversary of Amanda's body being found, her mother, Leslie, got an ugly message on Facebook from Garner. And it's available online, but I'm not going to read it because it's disgusting. And the next day, she got an anonymous phone call telling her that she had a death wish. So, I want to talk about a couple different theories that I think are relevant in this case. So, this is not a personal theory, but this is a police theory that maybe she accidentally asphyxiated during rough sex and the person panicked and didn't know what to do and so they dumped her a while later.
No.
Okay. I'm also on no.
So I'm going to say no, because logically, like, okay, we always say we never know how you're going to react in the situation. Obviously, I said some weird shit earlier. Don't listen to that. Anyways, so, like, logically, like, even if it was an accident, you would want to call 911. Or you wouldn't go to... Anything I say right now is just gonna totally be stupid because of what I said earlier, so whatever. But you would... I don't think you would go to the extreme of freezing somebody's body.
Like, why hide her for 5 weeks?
Right. Like, clearly, like, if it was an accident, like, that was one thing. Like, you know, that's an accident. But, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess, like, if he's, like, a drug dealer or whatever, maybe that's why he would go to the extent, or they would go to the extent of potentially freezing a body or whoever. But, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. And it could be too, like, okay, well, maybe they knew they were being watched and, you know, surveyed by police. So maybe that would be a good reason, too, to be like, okay, well, I can't get rid of her at this point in time. So another theory is that it's very possible that Patterson was involved and framed Garner. Because remember, he lives on the reservation. He could have very easily hid her body somewhere. And he would have known how to frame Garner. He didn't come back for Amanda that day, but he also is the reason that she got reported missing. So, I go a little bit back and forth on that. And it's also possible people think that both Patterson and Garner were involved. We don't know their relationship.
No, that's true. And then, they found both of their semen in her?
No, so they only found Garner's hair. They found Patterson's semen.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, yeah, like you said, we don't know how their relationship was, but I mean...
But why? That's my question. Why? It's also possible, because remember, there were also two unidentified women and two unidentified men's DNA on her body, but something to keep in mind is that she did work at the bar before going over to Garner's house. So that could have been literally anybody. But some people also speculate, maybe a larger group was involved. And I don't know. I mean, when I try to think about motive for Garner or for Patterson, Amanda was a police informant. Maybe somebody found that out.
That is true. That is true. That's definitely a lot. Like, that's definitely a reason why this could have happened to her, unfortunately.
Right.
I was thinking back to, like, you know, the other DNA and stuff that was found on her. Maybe they were having, like, a small party or something.
Definitely possible.
Like, a small get-together or something. That's how she got all those other kinds of DNA. Like, I mean, yeah, drugs are involved. Like, anything. Like, even if it... I mean, even if they were taking, like, GHB for fun, I don't see why people would take that for fun. But still, like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like that's more of a reasonable way for us to think of how she got the two other guys' DNA and the female DNA on her.
I can agree with that. I can see it having been, like, a party-type situation as well. But then again, are we saying that all these people are covering this up? Or are we saying that people were there at some point and then something happened later on that day? Because keep in mind, she wasn't heard from, like, as of, like, an hour after she was at Garner's house. But that doesn't mean that she wasn't alive at that point in time.
Right. So for my theory, I'm good as of right now, for my theory is... They had a small get together with a group of people, and then even if everybody else wasn't, like, taking the GHB or whatever, maybe she was still slipped it, like, just her, and she passed out. So everybody's like, "Oh, you know what? She's asleep. Like, she fell asleep. Whatever. She's, like, really high or really drunk or whatever. She fell asleep. She's just gonna stay here. She's fine." And then everybody else left, and then X, Y, and Z happened after that, and then she was dead.
That's possible too. I guess the thing that's really scary is that doesn't seem far off to me that somebody could be slipped something.
Yeah.
So something before I talk about what I actually think happened, I do have one more thing to tell you. Something important to know about Garner is that this type of crime isn't unfamiliar for him. So, trigger warning for the offenses that I'm about to share with you. This is a direct quote. Garner pleaded guilty as charged to 3 counts of rape in the third degree and 3 counts of criminal sexual act in the third degree. Between December 2008 and January 2009, he raped and sodomized a 16-year-old juvenile, impregnating her. Garner pleaded guilty as charged to 2 counts of robbery in the first degree and 2 counts of robbery in the second degree. On July 2, 2011, he orchestrated and led a home invasion in the town center of Clarence. Money and jewelry were stolen as the victim was terrorized in her house at gunpoint. Garner was also recently convicted as charged of strangulation in the second degree and assault in the third degree by an Erie County trial jury. These charges stemmed from a June 26, 2011 attack upon a woman in the city of Buffalo. So Garner's actually serving an 18-year sentence in prison right now that he was sentenced to in 2013. So the thing about that is that kind of aligns with one of the main theories for Amanda, which is that she was at his house and that not an accidental asphyxiation during sex, but a purposeful one. But there was no semen in her, but that doesn't mean that they didn't have, that he didn't, you know,
right,
sexually assault her. I'm just saying that he is a piece of garbage. And for all of those charges, for Amanda to have been a victim of him sounds very plausible to me.
Absolutely. The fact that he did this to, did what he did to the 16-year-old is disgusting within itself. So I would not put it past him to have done this to her. And I just feel really bad for her family. This is, it's bullshit.
It is bullshit. So activists working on getting the case reopened have recently said that they have a witness that can testify that Garner used a stun gun on Amanda. Erie County District Attorney John Flynn said of this, quote, "He will reopen the case if there is credible evidence not known earlier." So in regards to that statement about him having used a stun gun on Amanda and somebody having, and there being a witness to that, goes into your theory of there were 2 other men and 2 other women there.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe now somebody's willing to come forward.
Yeah. That theory, that's a pretty good theory right there.
It is. So activist and Erie County Sheriff candidate Miles Carter said, quote, "Antoine Garner is currently in jail. He's in jail for sexual assault and strangulation and attempted murder. What I believe what he's in jail currently in jail for. So his current crimes actually fit the same crime that several different coroners and medical examiners have said Amanda Wienkowski died from." So treatitliketrash.com is a site that's actually ran by the family, where you can go and you can donate to help exhume Amanda's body again because they want to do another autopsy. There is an area where you can send a message or you can view forums on there regarding her death. So I'm going to post this link in the show notes for anybody who does want to see it. But I urge everybody to please go and you can, there's, you know, there's petitions you can sign. Like, please go and do that. Because this is one of those cases that's so aggravating. Because there is no way that that was not a homicide.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, just from the way that she was frozen, the way that she was placed in the garbage thing, the can or whatever it's called, like the marks on her body, there's no way that this was a fucking accident.
Right. And even if they're saying it's an accident, how did she get in this trash bin?
Exactly. Like, isn't there a thing, like, isn't that called, like, aren't you tampering with, like, aren't you tampering with something? Like, even if it was an accident, like, you're literally trying to get rid of a body. Like,
or concealing something. Right. Yeah, no, there's definitely, there'd be a lot of charges.
That's what I thought.
Involved, even just for doing that. Yeah. So it doesn't make sense to do that. But, like, if it was an accident, it literally doesn't make sense that she would end up frozen, bent in half, in a trash dumpster.
The visual that I get every time you tell me about it, it's not...
It's heartbreaking. It's inhumane. It is. Like, I can't even, like, I can't even put myself to, like, visualize it because it doesn't make any sense to me. How somebody could be placed like that.
My brain.
Like, that's how little sense it makes. And there's so much evidence pointing to anything but an accident. And yet, here we are. So, you can't help but wonder, okay, is this a cover-up? Like, did somebody owe Garner a favor? Like, was this because the police the person who she was a police informant for was somehow involved in this? Like, what the fuck is going on that the medical examiners wanted to make sure that this was not investigated further?
I don't know. And then you absolutely think not. Like, the fact that she was a police informant, like, they would have put forth more effort.
To be fair, the police very much thought this was a homicide.
Oh, yes, you did say that. I apologize. You did say that they were pushing for her mom to get another, like, an independent autopsy. Yeah, you're right. Okay, sorry.
So I would love to know what everybody thinks. If you think that this is not a homicide, I would love to hear why, because I can't see it any other way. We would love to hear your guys' theories. You can send us a message on any of our social media, which you can follow on Instagram at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime,
on Facebook at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime,
on Twitter at
Crafts and Crime.
We have a Patreon at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
And you can send us an email at
craftsdraftsandcrime@gmail.com.
Please keep listening, and we appreciate you. Please rate and review us and tell a friend. Until next time. Bye.